If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday, June 30th, 2020. That's Kirby-shirted Ian Ferguson.
Hello.
Who's yawning. I'm Pat Contry. On the show today, we'll be talking about Unsolved Mysteries returning. Also talking about Sony exec calling for shorter games. We'll have an update on the Intellivision Amico, since we love that. Heritage Auction stuff, a Q&A, a Patreon poll. Ian, notice anything different about me?
No. Yes. Nice haircut.
Got a haircut. So, I went 5 months without a haircut, just about 5 months, about 20 weeks. And I didn't get a picture of my hair on the ground this time. I probably should have, because it probably would look like an Ewok at this point. But I got a haircut, because since you can go back to get your nails done in San Diego, you can get your hair done. Obviously with some precautions in place with everything going on with the COVID going on, which now we're spiking in California, everywhere that's spiking, but we were good for until May. But anyway, so I go, I make an appointment, I go in, and then there was only like three people getting a haircut in there. And then my hairstylist, hair cutter, the same woman I've gone to since I've lived here for almost 11 years. She was wearing a mask, which is good, except it didn't even go over her nostrils of her nose. So she was fudging the rules there, which I did not like. Puts me at risk, obviously. But I get a haircut. And it's too short. It's too short for me, the front. And that's because I always have to talk her through my haircut as she goes, because she talks a lot. And she loses focus. And I can tell. She does this side. I'm like, well, I said this, this is too short. This side's too long. So I got her through that. But that's not why I'm a little upset about the haircut, Ian. Because if you noticed my eyebrows at all, they're as thin as my eyebrows have been since my metrosexual days in my early 20s. Because, Ian, while my hair was getting cut, out of nowhere, like an RKO, she goes snip from 3 feet away and hacks off my right eyebrow without me asking, without a warning. Hey, do you want me to? No. Snip without using a comb to measure it like you're supposed to with eyebrows. You're supposed to comb down and cut, never cut from the top. She just went snip. And so I was like freaked out. I was like, I'm very particular about my eyebrows. And I am, as an Italian. You have to weed whack those when you're younger. You got to get them, taken care of.
I just got these big old fuzzy caterpillars.
Yeah. So, we're hairy men. You got to take care of it. You got to keep it nice. So now I'm freaked out. So then she kind of snips the other one, because now the right one's ruined. So I come home and I look, and it literally looked like part of it was shaved. That's how close she cut it. She was like 3 feet away. Went like that. She just, not even, and I'm done with her because of that. Like, I'm done. Sorry. I won't say your name. But that was unacceptable. Unacceptable. Do not touch someone's, and that was the first time she did it. She's done it a few other times. So I always go beforehand, don't touch my eyebrows, I should have done it this time. I should have said, don't, is that common? Is anyone out there that's a man that all of a sudden their styles or barbers just go after their eyebrows without you asking? You have to ask about that, right?
No. Most times I go to they'll usually throw the comb up there and give me a trim.
But at least ask you, right? Hey, I'll take care of them.
They're like, yeah, let me get your eyebrows. And I'm like, yeah, whatever.
Like, this was insane to me. So then I had to go home and see, oh my God, now the right is so short. Now I got to shorten the other one to match.
So you're penciling it in?
I probably should have to pencil this right one in for like another week. And you wouldn't notice unless you get like really closer, but it's thin. It is thin. It's like nice, but not for me. There. That upsets me more than there. The hair will go back in like 9 days. You won't even tell I had a haircut. Like, you won't even tell there. But now I'm going to get people complaining about my hair being too short. That actually happened on Twitch. People are like, oh, your hair. It's like, I got to cut. Either complain it's too long or too short. Everyone's a professional fucking hair judge now online. Twitch.tv/Contrycode. We watch 80s commercials every Friday or Saturday night. I'm also Ian on Cameo. Cameo.com/PatContry. I just did one for the Discord. People wanted me to do random sayings. Like, oh, Ian says hi and things like that. I got a kick out of it.
Nice.
So that's good. And we also got the enamel pins. I don't want to re-kick my hard drive. Enamel pins. We got t-shirts that are limited. And other goodies. Certain NES and Super Nintendo guidebooks at UltimateNintendo.com as well there. Ian, what did you do this weekend?
I
rambled a lot. Sorry.
That's all right. I worked.
I'm sorry. I was upset about my eyebrows.
No, it's all good. I worked all weekend. It was busy. I don't want to talk about work. But
frustrating.
Yes, very, very frustrating. Shit started hitting the fan this weekend.
Not literally.
No, just all the. Without getting into it, I've been saying how work has been going pretty well, and I haven't had to deal with a lot of like problem customers and stuff like that. Right. I haven't had to deal with a lot of stuff with masks. I haven't dealt with any bad trade-ins in a while.
Okay. It fell off a cliff.
Yeah, fell off a cliff. Anyways, though.
But not enough to bring back Tales from the Game Store,
though. No. I got through it. I went home last night. Had a whiskey and a dube, and it was a lot
better. We had a nice liquor conversation, Ian.
Yeah, we
bonded
did.
A little bit about liquor last night.
Big news, though. Good times in the Ferguson household. Mr. Driller Drill Land got released on the Switch.
Oh, okay.
Fantastic game. Mr. Driller Drill Land was a Japanese only GameCube exclusive that was released in, I think, 2002. It's
Mr. Driller, puzzle game.
It was a console exclusive. It wasn't an arcade game because it adds like a story mode to it. And basically the idea of Mr. Driller Drill Land is that there's a theme park that exists underground, and there's 5 different rides you can go on, and each ride is a twist on the standard Mr. Driller gameplay. So it's pretty cool. There's like a Tower of Draga themed one that is like Mr. Driller, but it's turn-based, and there's spells. There's the Haunted House one where you have to capture ghosts.
So it's Adventures in the Magic Kingdom, but Mr. Driller.
Well, there's a Space Mountain analogy. Okay. There's an Indiana Jones analogy.
Okay.
There's a Small World analogy, there's one more that is like, but yes, it's actually basically just the Magic Kingdom.
It scored 30 out of 40. That's a weird scale on Famitsu, and then in Australia on Cube Magazine, which was the thing, it got an 8.8 out of 10.
Yeah, it's just an amazing game. If you like Driller, I would say you definitely...
If you like the Mr. Driller's cinematic universe.
Yeah, you have to do that. Universe. And then I made beer cheese this weekend, beer cheese dip. I got bored of not being able to have pretzels and beer cheese. Got tired of it, so I made
beer somebody cheese. Got bored of not being able to have beer cheese.
Beer cheese. Well, so...
I haven't ever had beer cheese in my life.
Kinsey from the Metal Jesus Rocks crew came down with Tony a bunch of months ago, and we went to a brewery. And whenever we go to a brewery tasting room, doesn't matter if it's here, or, I always have to get the pretzels with the cheese and the mustard.
Oh, sure.
You've probably noticed this if we stop at like Stone Brewing to get food before going on a trip on a flight.
Sure.
It's always the pretzels with beer cheese and mustard. I cannot say no to a soft pretzel with beer cheese and mustard. So I've been missing
it. I do like a pretzel. I just never. I probably had it. You probably gave me a piece before. So it's a thicker cheese.
Yeah, it's just like it's a cheese sauce, but it's made with beer and spices.
You like beer?
I like beer.
God,
damn it.
Sorry. Well, that's good, Ian. That was good for you.
Yeah, I was able to do some cooking. My shoulder wasn't as bad this weekend as it was earlier in the week.
That's good, Ian. You doing therapy yet?
I'm doing therapy at home. I'm still waiting for them to call me back about my MRI. I called them on Friday. They should be calling me by tomorrow.
That's good. I went to the flea market on Sunday. I took the health risk going to the flea market. And honestly, I was actually impressed because by percentage, more people were wearing their masks and wearing their masks properly at the swap meet than at the zoo. Believe it or not, I'd probably say about 15% of the people at the swap meet were not wearing them properly. At the zoo, it was like 25% were not wearing them properly. You know who wasn't wearing them properly at the flea market? The vendors weren't. A lot of the older vendors weren't doing it. So much so that the fucking lady got on the loudspeaker and she was pissed. She was like, she wasn't even trying to come. She was like, please wear your mask. Like, it was like, she was upset. And then I talked to a vendor later. It's like, yeah, because some of the vendors in that whole back row over there, the old ones, they're not doing it. And they can get shut down for not doing that. And we're probably going to get shut down again anyway, because just announced today that they're closing bars in a lot of California counties because we're getting bad again. So I wanted to go to the swap meet before it's closed again. So I've only gone once the whole year before this. So I bought, I found through my buddy Derek, who always sells at Comic-Con every year. He always has lots of goodies, and he has a huge game collection, or used to. He had his Lord of the Rings collection of books and tabletop games and D&D stuff that was laying around, sort of stuff. And then he had basically all of the computer games that were, Lord of the Rings. All the Lord of the Rings computer games from like the early 80s to like the mid-90s, I bought them all.
Wow.
Especially the first two ones, I think, are really hard to find. One was like from like 83... And then
the one that plays kind of like Ultima.
Yes, I believe so. And then the sequel, and I couldn't even find one for sale of one of them on eBay. That's how hard they are to find. The first one that came out in 83 actually came with the paperback of The Hobbit, which I had to buy their placement. It didn't have that. It's only like a $5 or $10 book, that version. But he gave me a good deal on all of them. That's why I like Derek. He's the same guy I got the AES from way back when for $90, US one there. And then what else did I get? I didn't buy a huge amount. There wasn't a huge amount there. But yeah, in general, people were, you know, it's hard to social distance when you're at the flea market, but at least you're out in the open. You're not in a confined space when you're breathing and everything. But, you know, I got in and I got out in a couple hours, and it was mostly, it was like the flea market hasn't been full of vendors the way it used to be for like 4 years at this point, at least. But it was a decent size for a Sunday. It's never going to be how it was back when I first moved here, when it was like took you 3 hours to walk through once. That's not going to happen again. There, but yeah, I got those Lord of the Rings games, and I actually got the Chronicle. I don't know what PC games I own, and I have a lot. And at some point, once I Chronicle a bunch of the video game stuff, I have no problem parting with. I have to literally go through and start like my PC game collection, like Excel spreadsheet or Google, you know, spreadsheet, because I have no idea what I have. I almost bought something that I thought I didn't have. I thought I didn't have Ultima 2, since I have Ultima 1, 3, and 4. I knew for a fact I might have 5. I said, oh, I should get 2. It's hard to find any of those ones anymore. Those are collectible. I already had it, and I almost bought it again. I was like, oh, shit. I got to start writing this shit down, because I don't know.
You do. I mean, I finally did that with my PC Engine games, made a database that I can check, because it was getting to the point where I didn't know if I had certain titles or not, especially certain Mahjong titles. And I have to do it with my Game Boy games, because I, at this point, I simply don't know.
Well, it's also because they're not displayed anywhere. I got to start displaying them. They're all in boxes, most of them. I have some in the living room. I got to put some in the den. And I have some good stuff. I got some stuff that's worth probably at this point a lot that wasn't worth anything 5 years ago. Obviously, the market's exploded for some of them. I got a Chronicle. I have no idea. I have no idea. So, anyway, that's fine. Dr. Disrespect, the famous 80s cosplaying Twitch streamer who likes to film people in public bathrooms, he was banned. He was permabanned from Twitch.
Yep.
What was that, like on Friday or Saturday, whenever it was, over the weekend? And there's been no decision made yet why it happened, but
no announcement.
No announcement from Twitch. They're just like, oh, he broke our terms of service, whatever. Twitch has been getting rid of lots of streamers lately, with sexual improprieties and allegations happening, and they're starting to toss people off. YouTube's also been starting to toss off people, you know, white supremacists and people of that nature finally. So it seems like everything's coming to a head the past week.
Past couple of weeks, absolutely.
Almost in concert, these different companies are like, yeah, we're finally going to clean up. I think the social things happening. I think maybe that's part of it, but maybe they figure we can't ignore this any longer, and with the elections coming and
I do think it's a lot of the social stuff that's coming up. I think they're witnessing a sea change and realizing more and more that the people that they're getting rid of are very, very loud and a very small minority.
Yeah.
You don't need to cater to those people.
Sure. What's weird, though, is about the Dr. Disrespect thing, though, is that we don't know.
Yeah, we have no idea.
We have no idea. And they just signed him to an exclusive contract back in March for, you know, multi-million dollar contract. So in order to, within like 3.5 months, to go from a contract to getting rid of him, it must be pretty seriously. It can't be a little slight thing. So it just hasn't come out yet. It'd be a weird move to sign someone. Or maybe you realize I made a mistake 3 months later, but it has to be a real reason in order to break a contract like that, obviously.
Yeah.
It could be lawsuits.
I have no idea. I mean, and there's a billion rumors out there, and I'm not going to lend any credibility more to one or the other. We have to kind of mention this, but there's literally nothing else to say other than that. It's just speculation.
No, I'm just going to say this, though, about before you sign people to these contracts, maybe you should vet these people. Maybe you should, like, look into their backgrounds the same way they do with, like, when you're, like, a college basketball or football player. They, like, look into your background and make sure, hey, is this person involved with anything criminal? Are they a psychopath, like, before they sign a contract? Like, this isn't happening for any influencers. It's like, oh, you got views? Let's sign you. Not caring about
anything. And they signed him before they knew about the mixer thing going down. So maybe they were, you know, they wanted to keep someone. They wanted to, like, shore it up. But you already had problems with this guy.
Yes. You already suspended him.
I mean, honestly, I cannot believe that it wasn't a permanent suspension from fucking streaming in a fucking public restroom. Yeah. That's insane.
Yeah, I don't know.
They let you come back from that?
Who's gone for, what, like a month or
two,
less than a month?
It was 2 weeks, I think. I read. It was two weeks. 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's disappointing. Like, but I think maybe, like I said, we've reached a point where now people are starting to care about this stuff with people like Shane Dawson being...
Fuck that guy.
Outed for doing horrible things. And that's a name I've heard because I guess he does interviews with YouTubers, but he liked to do some a lot of blackface in the past. Not in the past, like in the past 10 years. And I don't know how that stuff...
That doesn't even get into the fucking puppet show he did with an 8-year-old, with a puppet that was supposed to be 8 years old, and it was all like sex jokes and fucking bullshit like that. It was disgusting.
So we have people that make bad decisions... And yes, I have done edgy jokes in my past, but I've never thought about doing blackface ever. Like, that would be acceptable. Or doing jokes about pedophilia in any nature. So, like, people have to be held accountable at some point. People are allowed to change, yes. But the point is that you should not be, like, aligning yourself. You're a big company with these people that have these really checkered pasts. Or you have to be aware of it before you get into bed with these people. You just do. I mean, I think that's common sense to do good business. Otherwise, you get into weird situations because now people are like, oh, Twitch, what the hell, man? You banned my cosplaying fucking streamer. And now, whatever. Don't get put in those situations. That's all. Real quick update. We haven't talked about WWE at all. First off, Undertaker officially retired.
Great.
That's good. I mean, he's a legend, Undertaker, right? You don't care about Undertaker?
I am now... probably more anti-wrestling talk than the most anti-wrestling talk listeners that we've had.
I don't watch anymore. I don't watch AEW.
I will get
AEW.
Back into it at some point, I'm sure, yes. Because wrestling always comes back around, but it is less interesting than fucking dirt to me right now. I have no interest.
Well, it's the fact that WWE has done an awful job trying to protect their workers and performers in COVID. Obviously, allegedly, they paid off the governor... through Linda McMahon in order to be deemed an essential business somehow in the state of Florida, because that's where they film.
Which governor says that? DeSantis?
Yeah, that piece of garbage that reopened way too early. Now Florida's a hotbed of cases.
Our governor is a fucking spineless piece of shit.
What's that?
I said our governor is fucking spineless.
Well, he's done a better job with this than other governors.
He opened up way too early and then basically said, well, that's that.
I think we're...
Can't go back now.
We're reversing.
We'll see.
So an unnamed wrestler came out and basically did an open letter, basically excoriating WWE about their handling of COVID-19.
Did the letter come from parts unknown?
Very good, Ian.
The boiler room.
Undertaker's from Death Valley. That's right.
Yeah,
the hottest place on the planet, by the way. I think it technically is. So, a WWE developmental talent speaking to Wrestling Inc. under the condition of anonymity has spoken out against WWE's handling of COVID-19 procedures. This comes in the wake of we love Renee Young. She's getting better. I think she is. Adam Pearce, Jamie Noble are among those who have come forward to confirm they have tested positive. And then Kayla Braxton said she tested positive twice in the week. Kayla Braxton subsequently quit Twitter in the face of responses from some fans. Because there's some assholes that say, oh, just wrestle, who cares? Because they're wrestling fans, I hate to say it, not all wrestling fans, a lot of wrestling fans have the IQ of less than a snail. So they just want to see their people pretend to beat each other up. They don't care about the actual workers at all. So now that WWE has more talent and staffers starting to test positive, we've been informed by talent relations not to discuss our illness with anyone besides those we may live with that may need to know. We are forbidden to tell anyone else, nor can we come out publicly to make any statements. So the word is that Renee Young came out, and they're pissed at Renee Young now for coming out and saying she had it. She tested positive. And the word is that they hadn't been starting to test for everyone until, like, I mean recently. They were just doing the temperature check. I saw that in an article. The temperature check is bullshit because you could be asymptomatic and not have a fever.
Yeah.
So the fact
or
that they're not
pre-symptomatic.
So the fact that they weren't testing, well, I would say that wrestlers being in each other's faces and exchanging bodily fluids is probably the most dangerous job you can have if you want to try to stay healthy. So I cannot believe they weren't testing everyone if the reports are true before events. Like, it's just total irresponsibility. And now the word is there's at least 20 people, both crew and wrestlers, that have this, and I hear it's like 30. Like, it could be more. Like, it's a lot. Like, it's thank God people like Roman Reigns decide this is not worth the risk. Thank God. Imagine if that Roman Reigns got this and he's just dead. He's dead. He dropped dead. Yeah, people there's dying.
Yeah, him and Sami Zayn were smart. Like, Dalal, Ethiopia.
Is that now the hottest place on Earth?
Hottest place on Earth.
Not that, I thought Death Valley got like 125 degrees or something.
No, I think...
well, who knows now with everything going on with the planet?
But my God, Dalal, Ethiopia is gorgeous.
What is it? What does it get to?
I didn't see. But it looks like it is covered in fucking pools of corrosive stuff and...
Oh my God, that looks like a toxic waste pool.
Yeah. It's pretty cool looking, though.
Oh, sure. You go swimming for there. Maybe it's just algae. Maybe it's algae there. It was stressed that, I'll go back to this, it was stressed that WWE will take care of any medical treatments should we need them. In the same breath, it was made clear that the company would handle the PR, and only those that needed to know about our condition would know, as HIPAA laws would prevent them from making our names public. I don't think you should go after workers who say to people, hey, I have this, but I'm okay. Like, you shouldn't go after them.
Yeah.
That's
ridiculous.
But they're not allowed to wear masks on screen. They want people not to be reminded. Vince just want people to be reminded that this exists while he's putting on his puppet show with real people. That's basically what it is, because you have an insane person in charge that shouldn't be in charge of $1 billion.
Yeah, it's like the fucking president of this country being like, I don't want to wear a mask visibly because it makes me look less
I'm
tough.
Not masculine now because I don't want to potentially infect people. And it's like, oh my God, how do we get to this point? I don't know.
Someone asked us not to talk about masks. I forgot.
Oh yeah, someone said I don't want to hear about masks. Sorry, you're going to hear about it because people are dying. So sorry. And then people if they're in the chat watching it on Twitch, excuse me, on YouTube, say anything weird, you'll be gone. That's all. Let's give you the boot. So yeah, and you're also obviously when you're doing this, you're putting. It's not just about your workers; it's about who you're in contact with. Because John Moxley is married to Renee Young, so John Moxley had to isolate and not be on AEW TV. So it affects the whole industry potentially. Anyway, so yeah, it's just if you're gonna do this and get that, if you're gonna pay out whatever it was allegedly, whatever $18 million to the state to be deemed an essential service, you think you would put in a few dollars in order to test people regularly. Like, you think that'd be smart, so you would cut it off when one or two people get infected, not 20 or 30. But what do I know, right? What do I know?
I don't know.
I you know.
You're just crazy, man.
I'm crazy. I'm just crazy like that there. This is an interesting little story that just because you figure they're still making Wii Wii U games. Shakedown Hawaii?
Yeah. So we've talked about Shakedown Hawaii before.
Have we?
We have, because I mentioned it and you looked it up and you were like, wow, that game looks gorgeous.
Oh, okay.
We've definitely mentioned Shakedown Hawaii before.
It's like an overhead GTA 1 or 2 style game, it looks like, right?
Exactly. And it's getting a Wii and a Wii U port. And
I feel like I should buy the Wii version just to buy it.
Yeah. I mean, this is a 2D game. It's going to run fine on, you know, either of those systems. There's not going to be
It'll run fine on what's got a Super Nintendo.
Yeah. There's not going to be any, you know, performance downgrades or anything like that. The game is like a top-down GTA game, but there is also supposedly... a bit of management sim added as
okay,
well,
great.
Which is pretty cool.
Wii Remote with Shake is supported.
Yeah, the Wii Remote is supported.
4:3 aspect ratio is supported for CRT.
Yep, 4:3. So you can play this. I mean, that's actually pretty
great. You can
pretend
it's 2008 again. Sure,
but this game, I mean, this is kind of cool because it gives you a slightly easier way to, you know, play a modern game on a CRT TV.
That's
one that will benefit probably from being on a CRT TV. Those always look very nice. On CRT TVs, and actually Am I crazy? I feel like the guy, the person who did art for this might be the same person who did... I'm going to have to look into that. Anyways, it is going to be coming out Thursday, July 9th for $29.99 USD, 3,000 copies.
It's limited to it, even.
That's the Wii version. And then the Wii U and Steam versions will follow in August.
Obviously, you're going to have all the collectors after this, regardless. For the physical version, because you will have those crazy Wii collectors. Well, they keep making games for the Wii 14 years later. You know, Just Dance 2020, did that come out? Was that on the Wii? So it's never over.
Right.
Like, we're getting into, or are we past PS2 territory? They made PS2 games for like 14 years, right? They're making soccer games still into the 2010s, I believe.
I think FIFA Soccer, like 2012 or something, was like the last game that they made for the PS2.
Just Dance 2020 came out in November, and that was on the Wii.
Still. Yeah.
No Wii U. Fuck them.
That's crazy. Well, because you can play it on the Wii U.
Oh, that's
and that
right.
Way, that way they don't have to
they
do two SKUs. And
I just
they
think
can,
it's funny.
They can sell that to the biggest install base.
The Wii U is now like the lost system. That doesn't
yep.
matter.
Shit, I was. I swear I was going to say something. Oh, the Dreamcast had a fairly big afterlife, too. You know, there was some shooters and whatnot that were released for that and sold. But...
that weren't just homebrew. They had like officially...
Well, games. I think at that point, yeah, they might have still been qualified as homebrew. I mean, now they've been released as indie games. But
that's what I mean. Like, these are not homebrews.
These are... Right, no, these are
official.
Official
releases here. So, anyway, yeah, maybe I'll check it out here. I think it'd be weird to buy a Wii game in 2020. I don't know why this that
yeah that'd be
me.
Strange
and then I hook up my Wii U to play it. I'm guessing there's that probably zero difference between them besides the controller modifications.
I would imagine zero difference, yes.
You know,
well, the Wii U is going to output over standard AV, whereas the Wii U will be HD.
that's right.
So that's the difference.
Get that nice 480p though if you get the component cables on the Wii like I had. It's like almost HD. It's like half. There you go. The NWC NES console. We spoke about this back in the fall, I believe, when it came out. And if people don't remember this was one of the consoles they would use. They would daisy chain them with a little telephone sort of cable on the back of the consoles in order to reset them all at the same time. I guess
right.
with one...
One press of the reset button, all of them would reset, and that would allow you to start all of the Nintendo World Championship carts.
Yes,
in unison,
which is brilliant. If you're putting on
insanely clever little,
I guess the finals of the competition. If you're qualifying, it doesn't matter. You don't have to compete, but it's just cool to have the competition. You're all racing each other, like me and Ian did. I'm thinking the second annual NES marathon. We did that with the two NWC carts with two NESs. Second or third one?
I think we did it maybe
back
both.
When we were still on good old Ustream back in the day.
Oh yeah,
there. We weren't signed anywhere. We weren't signed to Facebook Gaming or Mixer then. So anyway, so the NWC console, the only one we know that exists, it plays real games. Obviously, it has a different board in order to, and it has the little telephone little port in the back with it's like riveted in. That's really what this is, and it came up on eBay for $125,000 or best offer, and then it was just taken down within the past, I think, 24 hours or so. We're recording this on June 30th. I have no idea if this means it's sold or not. I guess we'll find out. Unfortunately, with Nintendo Age being dead, we don't find this news out anymore as easily.
Right.
We don't have that, like, not all the crazy collectors all congregate in one place to share information. Unless something's replaced it, I'm not aware of. So, but I guess we'll find out at some point. I have no idea what the price these consoles at anymore. Obviously, we saw the PlayStation prototype go for a disappointingly low number versus what they thought it was going to get. And what everyone, all the game journalists thought it was potentially going to get. And it's like, eh. So I don't know. I don't know. To me, this is ephemera. So it's different than a game or anything else.
To me, I think it's very cool, but I also, I don't know. I have no idea what the desire to own this is like out in the collector market. I think $125,000 is a long shot, but
definitely didn't go for that.
No, but that doesn't. I don't think they're bad people for saying when you're putting something up like that. I think you kind of, you know, you've got to put a limit somewhere, and you might as well go high and see what kind of. I didn't say limited, jackass. quit reaching for your buttons. You want to use your fancy toy?
I got new ones.
So you got to put something up there if you're just fielding offers. You might as well go higher than lower. But I absolutely I have no belief that it would go for 125. Well, my guess, and I don't even have any. There's nothing that leads me to actually guess this, but my guess would be it would top off at like 25,000 max.
Not your max. That's not a bad guesstimate. I see. To me, this is less interesting. It's interesting, but it's less interesting than even the NWC controllers because they're marked differently.
Right.
Like those have one and two on them. I almost bought one at one point from Chris Tang. I probably should have at the time because now with the weird market, it would go for five times the value.
Yeah, I remember when you passed up on it.
Yeah, I was like looking back. I'm like, I probably should have done that, but that was like 4 years ago.
Something like this isn't like a controller or a cartridge either that's easy to display as like a centerpiece of your collection
because it's an you gotta like. Tour around and say, hey, look, there's a telephone little port on the... So people be like, okay.
Right, there's nothing else that really marks it.
My rule is, how easily can you explain this to a casual person when it comes to collectibles? Yeah. That's my rule.
And that's going to determine how... That kind of... There is... It determines how cool something is on your shelf, which can add a great deal of value.
The value!
Yes.
I realized where I was going, and I knew you would put that on there, and I just... I bought into it.
But yes, but that's the point. It's like, how widespread could this be? Because there'll be tons of video game collectors I might have heard about. Oh, yeah, the Nintendo World Championships, even if they don't collect NES. But I'm like, okay, we'll show you the NWC cart, which is clearly says NWC. It's a game. Now we'll show you an NES that you'll be like, okay, it's an NES, but it's just an NES. It's a modified NES, but it's like there's a different sort of thing in your mind. It's the same reason why, you know... Like, if anything else, there's a lot of comics that are rare. We always say this. There's a lot of comics that are rarer than even Action Comics number one. But it's like, well, who cares?
It's like, right. There has to be a desire to own it at some point.
At some point, you have to be like, well, it's cool. And I think it's cool. You think it's cool. I got to think it's cool.
Yeah.
You got to transfer the cool factor over to somewhere else. That's why I always think with something like Steam Events, is always going to be tougher to transfer over the cool factor over years. Like, yeah, it's Steam Events.
Right.
It's a game that exists in another form, but it's...
I think this NES is very cool. Like, I don't know. I would love to, like, have a bunch of these NESs and TVs.
Yes, you want a bunch of them.
And I want to feel like a god. I want to hit that reset button and go, and watch them all reset in unison.
To play what?
I don't care. Just fire some shit up.
You can buy all the retro USB ones and put them in there or flash card them.
Just put anything in there, really. I just want to be able to watch them all.
Do a DuckTale speedrun contest.
I just want them all to go silent at once. Press of a button.
Well, this was interesting to me. How cool would it be if someone made this custom board? And nowadays, with everything, you can probably do that. Then you can sell custom boards, and you have to get a little mod for a little telephone cord in the back. That'd be cool. I mean, it's not practical. No one would ever use it unless you do, like, a convention. You know, but it's a lot easier to say, okay, everyone, press your button on your controller, on the second controller, press it now, and then you start. It's impractical, Ian, unless you're doing the wizard or an actual NWC contest. There, I actually won a game on eBay for the first time in like 7 years. That's interesting. Sorry. Well, actually, I won a computer game. There was two computer games that I loved as a kid. I was like, you know, I should get those. I had them as bootlegs. My dad had, and I'll reveal them once they arrive on the scene here. Anyway.
All right.
Most importantly, though, Ian, what's coming back?
Unsolved Mysteries is coming back.
Coming back, I think it's July 1st, which is tomorrow. I'll put it up on here. We can have this in the background. We don't have to watch it, but, I mean, it's just brilliant.
Is that there is somebody that's out there that knows the truth.
That's right.
I'm ready.
You ready?
I'm ready for this. That's what we're
asking for. I think it's only like 6 episodes, though. But, I mean, even with the tryout.
There is something bigger. I'm going to find out.
The tone is right.
Yes.
It's the dark, moody tone.
All these years.
Caterpillar randomly. Or millipede, whatever the hell that was.
It just doesn't make sense.
I feel like there better be some ghosts.
It's shot similarly in terms of how the style of interviews are. Yeah, it's close.
Yeah.
Ooh. I just can't forget about it. I won't forget about it.
Dead bodies, ghosts, disappearances.
I think they were probably taken by people who were desperate. I have no memory of the lost time.
Oh, missing time, aliens, maybe?
All of a sudden, everything erupted loudly. I get goosebumps thinking about it.
This case needs to stay open. It shouldn't ever close.
Oh, it's going to be good, Ian.
It'll be interesting, I think, to see.
I really do.
If you know something, please come out.
It'll be interesting to see if this is more Unsolved Mysteries or more Forensic Files.
No, because, those are unsolved mysteries.
Because unsolved mysteries...
literally are unsolved mysteries.
Yeah, but it kind of turned into, as it went on, it started to focus more on crime and stuff. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, it was
I'm
less
wondering.
It was less
and less
like
aliens
treasures
and ghosts and missing treasures and shit like that, and it was more and more crime. And while I am ready for a new crime show...
Less Lost Loves. I like the Lost Loves thing. It was a happy ending a lot of times.
I could do without
you
the Lost
You were weird
loves.
About that. I liked the Lost. It was always an uplifting story, usually. Half of them were solved.
But the... I realize that as time goes on, it's harder and harder to frame maybe ghost stories or find ones that still exist.
There is one in there. I saw one in New Jersey, Mount Vernon.
Even if it's majority crime, just throw me a bone and do at least one ghost story. Maybe do a hidden treasure
story. You can't do one every time. There's not enough stuff.
No, exactly. But if you're only doing six episodes,
Do a couple of ghost stories.
If you're doing six episodes, one alien. In the grand scheme of things, yeah. I better just see... I just want to see enough segments to be representative of unsolved mysteries as a whole.
Unsolved mysteries usually had, I think, four segments, four stories per 45-minute episode, we'll just say. Each one was roughly 10 minutes. You always had a crime one with someone getting murdered and or kidnapped. Then you usually had either a financial crime or a fraud thing in there because lots of people getting taken for money, like, you know, in a Boca Raton, Florida, some 6-year-old guy gets an 80-year-old woman and takes all her money and has done it like 8 times. Usually got one of those. Usually got either every other episode, a lost love thing where someone got separated with an adoption or found their missing sister after like 50 years. There's usually one of those. And then a supernatural one you got every 2 or 3 episodes.
The first 2 seasons, you got a lot of supernatural.
Well, you got the Halloween episode, which is famous because it was all ghost stories.
There's a couple. My friend Rick actually made me a DVD set where he ripped all the ghost stories. And it's like 4 DVDs from the first 2 seasons total. That's all the ghost stories.
And then you got an alien story once in a while. You got like crop circles. You got an alien abduction one. But then that sort of dissipated as you went into the 90s, which is funny because that's when like the X-Files came on.
Right.
But I think they realized, well, maybe this is horseshit and you can't solve any of this.
Right.
You know, basically. So we're going to get rid of that. And the missing treasure stuff I thought was pretty cool. They'd have like...
I always thought that was kind of neat.
You know, things like that. It's like, oh, out somewhere in Utah, someone buried a treasure and people are looking for the clues. Some guy's been looking for the
treasure. For Sonny Jim's
some guy
gold
for
bullion.
Like, some old guy literally looking for like 35 years, like he's from the Goonies, like looking for the treasure.
So, one-eyed Willie.
But, you know, exactly. So anyway, I think it's going to be good. I'm going to watch it. Someone suggested we should do reviews of each episode. I don't mind that. You can do watch parties on Netflix. There's a browser app where everyone can sync up if they have it, and you can watch together.
Wow.
So maybe it's something on Twitch to do that. But no, and I like the fact that they didn't overly remix the theme. It was just the same theme. But
yeah.
Don't go too fancy.
You don't need to fuck with something.
They screwed
like that.
Up the theme in the later years. They changed the theme too much. Yeah. The last couple of years when it went to like Lifetime or what have you. I would like to see though, like just like a Robert Stack statue somewhere.
Yeah,
like a little plaque.
I was going to say
something
that.
Like that.
Please let there be some sort of reference to the Stack Man.
There has to be something there.
Yeah,
like I don't care if you make like a fake Robert Stack Institute of Unsolved Mysteries little. office or something, you know, like just there has to be. I don't care if you show like his trench coat hanging up.
Yeah, please.
You think that still exists?
I was just wondering.
Auction.
I was like, that is a TV show prop. I would pay money for. I would save
Let's
my fucking halfsies. Pennies.
Let's
I would
have these again.
I can wear it. I can wear it on even days. You can wear it on odds.
That has to exist somewhere.
Yeah, well, of course it does.
I want to look that up at some point. We're going to look that up at some point about what happened. Fuck it. What happened
to Robert Stack's trench coat?
Robert Stack's, not son, trench coat. That comes up automatically. Trench coat. Is that one word? Two words.
Let's see.
13 things you never knew. Uh-oh. A chat with Robert... I only wear the trench coat because I desperately... they did a chat with him. All right, we'll find this later. It has to exist somewhere.
Yes.
I mean, it's your standard trench coat. My father had probably one of those in the 80s. You know, trench coats were in for men back then. Damn.
Stack wore his from 88 to 02.
Remember, he wasn't the original host of Unsolved Mysteries. They did a little pilots with other people before that. With, what the hell, the guy played Perry Mason. What's his name?
I don't know. Doesn't matter.
Anyway. All right. You want to move on to the main podcast?
Moving on to the main podcast, which may be shorter in length than the intro. Former Sony exec calls for shorter games that are cheaper to make. This is a Kotaku article. This has kind of been, this comes up every once in a while. And this time it's Sean Layden, former chairman of Sony Interactive Entertainment Worldwide Studios. He says that he would welcome the return of the 12 to 15 hour game. I would finish more games. First of all, just like a well-edited piece of literature or movie, I've been looking at the discipline around that, the containment of that. It could get us a tighter, more compelling content. It would be something I'd like to see a return to. And I agree wholeheartedly. And it's not just for reasons of editing exists in novels and movies for a reason. And I've played games that definitely seem like they have filler segments or that are paced improperly. But if you get shorter games... shorter games would kind of help, I think, the current problem that is happening in game development of crazy ballooning budgets and crunch. By making a 12 to 15 hour game with high production values as opposed to, you know, a 30 hour game with high production values, you're inherently automatically limiting the amount of work that needs to be done on it. And you can cut out all sorts of crap in the meantime.
I didn't hit the button there. I think it's interesting. I think this is... this almost goes along the lines of, you know, the gamers now speaking about this are like the first generation of gamers that have hit their like 40s, we'll just say. We're like, yeah, there were people gaming, you know, in the 70s, but that was like a fad and Pong. I'm talking about like people like grew up with the NES that are still gaming today, like a lot of us are. That our lives, we change priorities as we get older. We don't have time to sit home anymore and just play tons of games. Like people have 9-to-5s. And they come home and they can't go through a game that takes 60 hours or 80 hours to complete. It's just impractical. We have responsibilities. People have families. People have other things to do. Well-rounded people. Obviously, there's people that can stay home on a weekend and play for 20 hours. Most people can't do that. So you're also, I think, over time, you are, by making these games that people beforehand know, oh my God, it's going to take me 100 hours to complete this, you are turning some people off, I think, at the same time. Some people might just want a shorter game. I get turned off sometimes when I hear about how much content's in a game. When I hear, oh, yeah, Breath of the Wild, you can play it for 300 hours. I'm like, that's great. I'm never going to get to that point.
Or like the new Persona 5 Royale Edition that came out. I actually thought about going back to it because I didn't finish the first one, or the Persona 5 the first time, because I liked the game. It's good. But the Persona games are RPGs that are well known for having like 120 fucking hours of gameplay in them to get through. That does actually... stop me from picking it up, because I go, I'm having a tough time beating this 10-hour game. Like, I'd enjoy the time that I spent on it. It's not wasted time, but I have to start looking at these games that I play and making the cuts to ones that I know I'm just never going to get the money's worth out of.
Yeah, at some point, I think you have to just take a step back. As Layden said, let's see here. The cost of creating games has increased. Some studios show it's gone up 2 times every time a console generation advances. The problem with that model is it's not sustainable. It's not. And miraculously, like as we said, games have stayed at $60 somehow. And yes, they've added microtransactions and DLC. But if you cut down the production time and scope, I think you'll be safer at $60 or less without these microtransaction stuff. I mean, when you talk about GTA, that game came out 7 years ago. There still hasn't been a new one that's come out. And yeah, people are playing the online, but those games take like 4 or 5 years to make a GTA.
Easily.
Like, these are budgets that are well beyond blockbuster movies. These are hundreds of millions of dollars once you get to that point. So these are risky ventures. They have to make sure they make their money back. And yeah, it's like, oh yeah, we want to get as much value out of the game as we can, but I'd rather have something come out more frequently and less of a risk, and then there's less fucking bullshit put on the game. I mean, look how bad Battlefront 2 was regarded because of that, partially. Yeah, and yes, that's EA's fault, obviously, for putting in all that the bullshit microtransaction stuff. But I don't think people would mind as much if the games were short. I think you'd have a lot less people complain than you realize. You'd have a vocal minority say, yeah, I want to play a game for 150 hours. Well, most people don't.
I think you would find a lot of people... I think some people... it might take time. The people who actually do get around to like finishing a lot of these, it might be a shock at first, but I think you'd be beating the same amount. You'd be beating more games. You'd be playing more. I don't think there's a real negative. At least... to me, I don't see one.
And like I said, if there's less money put into each individual game, then you could have potentially more risky games that you'd be like, okay.
Oh yeah, we're seeing a lot less risk, and we're seeing a lot less games overall
from AAA.
A lot less risk and a lot less a lot less games overall. If you look, if you just look at the number of games that came out on the 360 during its lifespan, and you compare it to what came out on the PS4 or the Xbox One, it's a fraction. It took us 3 years to even get somewhat of a wall of physical titles for those systems up there, because A, people had gone more digital, but B, there just wasn't the same amount of games being released.
It sort of followed the same mold as the Hollywood studio system, where they don't like taking risks anymore.
Sure.
There's a lot less smaller, we'll just say, what's a smaller tier, like $10 to $20 million movies being made. They don't exist anymore. It's either really indie low budget or really fucking huge blockbuster.
Yeah, and that's what we have now.
There's nothing in between where it's like, oh, this could be interesting.
We have teams of 1 to 20, and then we immediately jump to like
700 people.
Yeah, you know, 350 plus.
Where it's like literally bigger budgets than movies and more people than a movie. Let's see. Here's a quote here. Major AAA games in the current generation go anywhere from $80 million to $150 million or more to build, and that's before marketing. These are movie budgets. That's a movie budget. It's a huge upfront cost. Extended over time, it takes 3 or 4 or 5 years to build a game while you're not getting any return on the investment. You just continue to pay into it for the big payoff at the end. I don't think in the next generation you can take those numbers and multiply them by 2 and expect the industry to continue to grow. They can't, because one misstep means your studio's finished at that point, just about.
Yep.
You know, you can't. You can't put half a billion dollars of development and marketing into a GTA game not realizing we're going to make a return on this investment, especially if they're publicly traded companies. You can't do that. You got to make sure. So of course they got to take a step back in this. Of course. It's just common sense to me.
And I think one of the benefits would be, as mentioned in this article though, is I do think a lot of these games would benefit from some editing.
So they're too bloated as is.
They get too bloated. There's a lot of filler content that I personally just don't need, and it's there simply to pad out the game. And it's not there, and I realize they're doing it because I think that people think that there's this expectation. You know, I've enjoyed the Final Fantasy VII remake, but like every once in a while they'll stop and they'll be like, there's 5 side missions you can do here, help these kids, and it's like, it's all boring bullshit. Like, some of it adds flavor story to it, but some of it's really like they wanted you to stop here and waste 45 minutes to an hour so that it could pad the game out.
That's ridiculous.
And you know, I have a regular customer who, I've mentioned this stuff before, but it's on my mind because I have this regular customer who came in yesterday. And he was talking, he always picks up, you know, a bunch of games, and he usually grabs a couple from various systems. And he was just saying that, you know, he was talking about how there are certain games that he likes, but he can only play them on weekends because he gets home from work and he's tired. And, you know, by the time he starts, these games drag so much out that it doesn't feel like you can ever really get a meaningful 1 hour play session in of some of these titles.
It doesn't feel like you did anything. It
doesn't feel like you did anything because everything just takes so fucking long. You know, like you can't really throw on Fallout. You know, Fallout 4, especially if you've never played it before, and play for an hour and feel like you've really done anything of any merit. And I'm assuming because you're invested in storyline, it would probably be the same for something like The Last of Us Part 2, which I think is kind of the game that triggered this conversation again. It's between 20 and 30 hours, and people say, you know, a lot of it just
bullshit.
Just kind of, it's going over and over the same shit over, like, you know,
fetch quests that
torture. I mean, not only is it, you know, it's the same stuff, but
thematically, it's the same thing over and over again.
And it winds people down. But still, even if it was a happy game, you know, there's an argument to be made that some of that can be cut and edited because the original game, which got great reviews, was about a 15-hour main campaign.
So they almost doubled it.
And critically, they had no reason to think they needed to double it. They just did.
I don't think you're going to get more people to say, well, I didn't buy the first one, but this one's double the length. No, if you like the first one, you're going to buy the second one. It did gangbusters, this game. So, like, it's weird. I just looked up. I'm trying to compare it to something like books, because books can take a lot of time to get through. There's no book that takes 30 hours to read, I don't think. I looked up one of my favorite books that's a big book. I think it's 700 pages or so. Great Expectations. Classic Dickens. I love that. There's a website, I guess, that tracks how long it takes to read. It takes 6 hours and 22 minutes to read Great Expectations. And that's a long book. That's a long quality book with no filler.
Sure.
And yes, it's not interactive like video games. I get that. But I'm just trying to compare different mediums with each other. Be like, no one would say, wow, I wish Great Expectations took 12 hours to read. No one does that with books.
Right.
a fun book's a fun book. You know when a book goes too long.
Yes.
Oh, you know that. You want to kill yourself because you can't skip it or fast forward like or do a cheat code like you do with video games. You have to grind through the book. So I don't understand that how anyone could complain a game's only 30 hours long or only 15 hours long. When you look at the price per, especially with a lot of indie games that are even 15 hours long, they cost like $10, $15. That's a lot of value you get out of there versus, you know, if you're playing a game like GTA 5 for hundreds of hours and you spent $60, I think you got your money's worth. I don't think you can complain at some point.
No.
Especially since movies now cost $18-$20 to go to, and those are 90 minutes long. And those have actually adjusted with inflation and cost of production.
Right, yeah.
So people complain about that, but say, yeah, a movie costs a lot more to come out with. I'll pay $20 to see Endgame for a few hours. That's well worth it. Like, we don't complain about movie costs. Are people actually complaining about video game costs still?
I don't think anyone really does.
Go back to my $60 fucking Three Stooges game in 1989.
Yeah.
That wasn't the value I was looking for. Thick but quick young Pat was not looking for that value there. So anyway, all right. Anything else to add here on this? I think you're good. I think are there that many people out there that can buy multiple 80-hour games in a year and not be phased by them and just be like, all right, I'm fine.
There are, and I mean,
do they have jobs? I mean, are they trust fund kids?
No, some people have jobs. I'll be honest. If I could actually, and this is getting a little off topic, right, if I actually had focus. I spend a lot of time pacing around, not actually doing anything because of ADD.
Okay.
But if I could actually focus and sit down and play the games that I bought, I could get through a few 80-hour games a year with the free time.
Most people work like 8 hours a day, 9 hours a day.
Yeah.
Get home, let's say 10 hours. You cannot be gaming more than 4 hours a night at most. At most.
Are you kidding me?
And getting to sleep and getting up for your job the next morning?
People do it.
They do 5-6 hours a night?
Yeah.
What are they on speed?
Lifestyle gamers, man.
All right, 6 times 4, 24 hours. And then and each weekend they're doing probably 10 hours a day then.
They're living life on microwavable soup and Mountain Dew, whatever.
That's why we can't have universal healthcare. There it is. Long video games and microwavable soup. And your wrap noodles that aren't healthy at all for you, but are tasty.
They're slightly healthier than the other ramen I had in my cupboard.
Like 1,000 less milligrams of sodium in
them? No, like 50 less milligrams of sodium out of 1,000 milligrams.
Yeah, I was
going to
say
sodium.
Your water weight is like 70 pounds, right?
Yeah.
It's just bloating up. All right, anything else to add here?
No. And the CE Podcast is proud to be sponsored by Miller High Life. Miller High Life is an unpretentious quality beer. The champagne of beers is available to everyone, and it's affordable. You can celebrate the wins of everyday life with Miller High Life. Big or small, there are always moments worth celebrating. Whether it's just getting home from a rough day of work or finishing everything that you had on your to-do list for the day.
Oh man, it's good just to relax with a nice Miller High Life when you're home.
The summer, Miller High Life will raise a can to celebrate summer's simple moments with limited edition champagne cans. It doesn't have to be a big moment for celebration. It could just be firing up that grill for the first time. You can find these limited edition cans in stores now.
Miller High Life, the champagne of beers, a quality beer within everyone's reach. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. All right, Ian, we have to discuss the Intellivision Amico. I'm going to be as professional as I can from the start. I must say that without ad hominem toward the people running it or person running it, especially the person that has called us both lazy cowards, we're still going to be professional discussing this from a business aspect.
Yes.
As much as we possibly... We're going to give more respect to the person who isn't giving us respect. We'll just say that. So, the source of this information is that good old source for Amico News, AmicoGames.com, which is a Tumblr that literally posts memes about what's been going on with the Intellivision Amico and its CEO, Tommy Tallarico. And some of them are pretty funny, so check out AmicoGames.com. But we're not here to talk about memes. We're here to talk about something that warrants a little bit more discussion.
Some positions that need to be filled.
There's 4 job listings that have come up. 2, I think, have been there for months and months. I recall them coming up before, but 2 in the past week that have come up. So we're going to start from less serious to more serious as we go along here to discuss these and see if any red flags are raised. And before we get into these, this is a console that is supposed to be in people's hands on October 10th, 2020. That is less than 3.5 months away from now. That'll be 3 months on July 10th. And as we record this on June 30th, we have not heard of this being pushed back at all. If you go to the FIG site, where pre-sales have kind of been anemic since they've gone up there, now that the estimated delivery there says Q4 2020, but I believe the 10-10-20 is still on the main website here and there. So let's just go from now. And even if this is fourth quarter, this is something that's troubling we're going to get into here. But even going in reverse, Ian, in terms of how the process works on manufacturing and shipping, this would have to be completed, this console, in its entirety, I would say, in order to get people's hands by mid-October, by 3 weeks from now. Because if you're going to put these all on a huge shipping freighter, that minimally, based upon my smaller experience with the books coming from China, we're talking
six
about
6 to 7 weeks.
6 to 7 weeks, if, to be safe.
Right.
Something like that. Sometimes longer. We'll even say 6 weeks. So you revert.
Say
that,
a month and a half.
Month and a half. So that means in order to. And that's just to get on land, not then picking it up, bring it to your warehouse and fulfilling it. This has to be done, this console, in the boxes, on the freighter. I want to be even generous, and I will say by the first week of August. 6 weeks, you get to like late September,
and then it hits essential shipping, and then it gets trickled out.
This thing has to be produced and done. If you want to give them this huge benefit of doubt, we'll say mid-August.
Sure,
we'll say mid-August, which is only 6 weeks from today. That means it has to be done, finished. No more updates.
6 weeks.
You can still do stuff on the backside, but this thing has to have all the software loaded on it. It's got to be complete. All the controls got to be, everything's got to be tested and complete. In the boxes, everything. In the middle of this summer.
We still don't know that we've even seen an actual.
Well, we haven't seen an actual console.
It's all renders.
They're all renders on the videos, and when Tommy in interviews has been showing are 3D printed, and something 3D printed.
Controller shells.
And the console, that's a prototype.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know, which may have the real board in it. We don't know, but we've seen nothing production yet. So they are still looking for some positions here, which is troubling to me at this date. So the engineering ones we'll go through first. They're looking for a mechanical engineer and a mechanical production engineer as we do this on June 30th. These are from Indeed.com here. And hey, if you find the position from us talking about it, maybe you give us a kickback, Indeed. maybe do that. So they're seeking an innovative mechanical engineer to join a rapidly growing team. As part of our production innovation design team, you'll contribute to the successful testing and launch of the Amico console and design and development of future hardware products and peripherals. In the immediate term, this position will be responsible for conducting and documenting functional mechanical testing and accelerated life testing of Amico's hardware. Longer term, this position will assist with the design, prototyping, testing, and sourcing of future products and peripherals. So this is alarming, I think, because
we have to focus on the immediate use part, which is testing of hardware.
That has to be just about done if you're going into production.
6 weeks.
If you're supposed to be producing, at minimum, we'll just say, if they want to sell a few more, let's say 15,000, because the pre-sales, as we know, are supposed to be around between 12,000 and 30,000. This has to be buttoned up. You should have a manufacturer model already made that you are now putting through its paces before you say, all right, hit the button, make 10,000 or 20,000 of them.
So 6 weeks to go, we're looking for people to test the system.
And document the functional mechanical testing of the in and outs of how this works. Remember we talked about the Atari VCS and how they had the documentation and everything.
Yes.
That was them getting to the point where, okay, our factory can make this product. Now we got to make sure they made it properly before we push the button or go and then produce them all. We made fun of them revealing the steps coming out, but they were going through the steps.
Sure.
It just seemed a little sloppy of us knowing them. It doesn't seem like they're at that step yet of having a factory a model ready to actually put through its actual paces.
Correct.
And test, okay, we have it here. Here's our prototype made with the actual materials that the end consumer will get. Is this properly made? Are there defects? Is this fitting properly? Is there something weird going on? You know, I don't know all the ins and outs of manufacturing, but I do know that's a part of the process there. So that's alarming, I would say. They also have a mechanical production engineer, which I guess is be working probably along with the other person here are parts of it. Their responsibility is to manage all elements of production in our global factories, including 3D designs, databases, engineering drawings, part approvals, and engineering change orders for future, for current products. Sorry, not future products. So it seems to me that you would need these positions in place now in order to make sure that this comes out seamlessly.
Yep. Let me read this next one. This is the one where I start to go, oh boy.
Oh, before we get there, real quick, we'll run through a couple more of these. Troubleshoot and mitigate production issues, including functional process and cosmetic changes, which goes back to my point about once the factory has a model in hand, okay, you work
with fine-tuning that model.
Because a lot of times there might be issues with it. Some things don't fit properly. Maybe there's too much heat with the board or what have you. There's always
going back to the Atari VCS. The gap is a quarter of an inch.
We got to change the rib design to be right. One piece. You know, there's always going to be weird shit that comes up. My point is this: is that if this is supposed to be in production to hit the October date, which I don't know, there hasn't been a delay that I know of yet. This has to have been fulfilled already. Like, these are positions that have to be there already. Sorry to cut you off.
Nope.
I want to hammer that point.
No, that's fine, because it's really setting up for how bad some of this sounds, which is the next this next one. Senior game console firmware developer. Job description.
And this is coming from ZipRecruiter.
ZipRecruiter. You will take on a key software position, working with the lead firmware and hardware engineers on the new Intellivision game console to help develop all the firmware and system-level software to make the system run. I'm going to let that linger for a second. All the firmware and system-level software to make the system run. Although your job is primarily firmware, you may be required to design simple PCBs, evaluate ICs, write drivers for them, etc. So you should be a professional embed engineer with experience in electrical design of microcontroller, microprocessor systems, but you prefer developing firmware, and that's your passion and what you will mostly be doing.
You will report to the lead firmware engineer on the project. So there is a lead here, but it seems like we still have to fulfill a key position here. A very key position.
This is... You will be responsible for helping to bring up the hardware from a firmware perspective and for helping to write all the code that gives the machine its basic boot system, basic boot sequence and system loading. You'll have to work at the Linux Android driver level, but dig down into registers, et cetera, et cetera. You need to feel right at home doing this. They need a system.
I think it's interesting where we have so much focus on games, right? Because games is what people expect a game console to have. You want to play games.
And they're developing these, as far as I can tell, in Android. I mean, you can...
Yes.
You don't need a working...
Yes.
You don't need your own...
No.
This is not a proprietary system.
This isn't denigrating mobile games. These are mobile games. Which means you do not need to have, like, a dev kit to make a mobile game.
Right.
It's standardized.
They can make the mobile... they can make the games well ahead of having the final system.
Yes. Which is the point, is that other devs are getting paid. There's German people are getting grant money to make for the games, which we've talked about before, which we can touch on again, how that might be troubling with everything that's going on. But the game development in this case, not like a PS5 case or a Nintendo Switch case, the game development in this case...
Does not show system progress.
Does not guarantee that the system is coming along smoothly.
Right.
It doesn't. Because you're developing mobile games. Literally ones that are on a mobile device. If the two that we know about, but also, I don't know, the Moon Patrol demo on the app is literally a mobile game because it's on...
Right.
They're mobile games. We can't pretend they're not at this point. The system will run on a modern system on a chip, 8-core APU, with GPU running a custom Linux plus Android environment. You must have experience getting Android up and running on target hardware, even if this was on a pre-developed BSP. I don't know what that is. If you've never done this, it's non-trivial. Game console running on an APU based on Linux plus Android will, of course, require hundreds of drivers. Many will be off the shelf, but you and your support team will have to develop, modify custom drivers, especially in the areas of Wi-Fi and Bluetooth.
So we need drivers to be developed?
So they have
within
to...
Within 6 weeks?
They have to come up with the coding and firmware. If people don't realize, firmware is the communication software to make sure the hardware can run. That's what firmware is. We are still looking to find it. I don't know how much the leads are getting done, but it doesn't seem like we're close to being finished on actually having something functional. Even if you're manufacturing the console, you need to put the software firmware on that console.
Yep.
These are different pieces going on. And as far as I know, I don't think you could responsibly manufacture a console without the software and firmware all being completed.
No, I don't think
it would
you
seem
can.
Haphazard to do that, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Wouldn't you have to have steps in line? Like, whenever you see, like, prototypes of the PS5 and Nintendo Switch or old consoles, like, it doesn't matter what the console looks like. Remember the Project Dolphin, you know, for the GameCube.
Mm-hmm.
You develop the operating software, the environments, the firmware on the whatever your hardware, whatever final way it looks is trivial compared to making sure that's done first.
Right.
Have an operating system completed. Have all the firmware completed. Now let's worry about how our console looks, what's proper for that. This is, to me, ass backwards, obviously. Because now we know from day one, when this was announced in October 2018, they just had a cute console to design. They didn't know what the hell was going to go in it. There was obviously nothing close to being finished. We have an idea for a console. And now I think this is the result of that backwards development. We are seeing it now. Mm-hmm. I think there'll be a huge struggle. I'll be shocked if this is anyone's hands on October 10th. I would love to be proven wrong, Ian, because now they've taken $1.5 million of people's money.
Yeah.
You know, I would be shocked if this is in people's hands on October 10th. Hell, I might go a step further. I might be shocked that we'll see this year if they're this far behind. Unless they really ramp up and get this thing finished in the next, I'd say, couple of months to have it come out this year. And this, and we didn't get to the last position yet, which we'll get to. And this has nothing to do with COVID. This is not a COVID issue. This is people developing and writing firmware and software.
This is all stuff that you can hire, discuss, talk about, phone, online, email,
yes,
work from home.
Zoom meetings.
Some.
You work off of a GitHub together and you share resources back and forth. That's how other game developers do it, even in office. So this is extremely troubling. This is what it says on the listing for a firmware developer. We are developing a game console here. That's good. It probably should have been developed by now if you're ready to go into manufacturing.
Yeah.
This is a high-performance hardware platform that is size and cost-restrained, so getting everything out of performance out of the hardware is imperative, MIP. I don't know what that stands for. You should be highly concerned about speed, optimization, memory allocation, cache architectures, and so forth. Blah, 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 blah. And so, and another one, the embedded Android software developer, and these were posted. Oh, they're posted over a month ago. So they've been looking for these two for over a month, and they're not filled yet. This is a 2 to 3 month contract with possibility of full time employment. This one, this is again working with hardware and firmware teams on a new video game console to develop system level Android software to make the system run. We are not at the point where we're making the system run at this point, unless these are old job listings from ZipRecruiter. Your job will be primarily at the level of the operating system and tools.
Jesus.
Other senior engineers will also be brought on board, depending on the anticipated level of effort required to complete the product in a timely manner. The system, again, will run on a system on a chip. And we don't know what the board is in here yet. It's been postulated that it's a banana pie board. I'm not going to say that's for true. Some of the specs do line up with the banana pie board, which is like a $15 to $20 off-the-shelf Android system board.
Mm-hmm.
It has not been revealed. They don't have to reveal if they don't want to, but obviously people are going to be wondering it. But it's, to me, it's probably in that cost range based upon what this system is. It's probably something like that. Our game console will of course require numerous drivers. You and the other system software developers will share responsibility for writing what amounts to a new home screen for the console, plus all the software plumbing for downloading content from our servers, launching apps, and providing numerous menus and other user experiences to players. You'll also be involved in writing the code that communicates with our wireless hand controllers.
So, to me...
What?
To me, I mean, this one and the other one are the most damning, and they've been up there the longest, so who knows if they're just old or what. But this is, I mean, very much... I cannot walk away from reading these without anything less than the assumption that this console is basically nowhere near ready. No firmware, no user interface.
We don't know if it can boot up. We've seen games being played. We have not seen whatever custom system architecture that they've come up with whatever customer. We have not seen someone hit a button, unlike the VCS, which is now we know it's been produced. We've not seen someone hit a power button, see it come up on screen. Hey, here's the Amico screen. We boot it up. Click a game to load. Let's load the game. We haven't seen that yet.
No.
That's not insider info. We haven't seen that yet. That has to exist in order to... I'm not trying to talk down to people. You have to be able to boot up a console, have everything communicate properly between your console, your controllers, be able to download content
from the web store,
have the servers be operational from their home in order to each individual's consumer base. This has to all be working before you are going to manufacture your console,
which you should probably be doing within about 6 weeks.
We're not saying it has to be 100% perfect. It has to be done, though. It has to be buttoned up, at least to that point. This tells me you're not there. You are not close to being there at this point.
Yeah.
This isn't alarmist. This is, to me, common sense. This isn't like being a hater. This is what is going on with your console.
Yeah, what's actually happening with
it? It's full-stack development, this embedded Android software developer. Full-stack development. I had to look it up because I didn't know what that term was. I dropped out of computer science in college. Full-stack development is... A full-stack developer is a person who is comfortable working in the front end and back end of web development. Basically means you got to work on the server stuff on both sides.
Right.
From the outgo and, I guess, the incoming messages. The communication on both ends.
That sounds like web store stuff.
It's web store stuff. It's probably updating software. Hell, I'm not. I don't know if there's clarifications yet about this. About if this is out of the box, you can play this without an internet connection. My guess being that this is mostly digital games. You're going to have to require an internet connection to get up and running and to register.
Right.
So these are all things you need. By the way, we don't even know at this point. This is an aside that's small, since this is something that Tommy tried to do a gotcha. We don't even know what the physical media format is on this console yet.
If there's going to be one, I very innocently said something about there not being physical media on it because it was not announced anywhere. And he came back, and I don't know if it was trying to, you know, try
it's
to
gotcha, like the price thing. You were right on in the end.
Right. He was like, oh, no, we didn't say that there's never going to be any. There might. We're looking into it.
Which is funny because I wonder how many of the
not everything requires an answer back.
I think it's funny. I wonder how many of the people that pre-ordered this Intellivision, put down their deposit, realize that they're not getting what they consider to be a real physical format. I haven't seen a card slot or a cartridge slot or anything, or even like a little Switch slot on here. The rumor I saw was that, again, this is a rumor I heard, that it's basically your physical media will be an RFID card that you basically, your system scans and it downloads
it. So it's not really physical.
So it's not. It's physical in a sense, but it's not physical.
Right. It's like going to. It's like the. There's been a few games who released like physical cases with a download card inside.
Sure.
So you could have it on your case, like DuckTales did that initially, the DuckTales remaster.
Sure, but an RFID chip is through the air, though.
Yes.
So it's basically going to be a command to say, oh, this person bought it, like a gift certificate. Download it from the server.
What I'm saying is it leaves you with you're buying a digital game. It leaves you with a trinket.
It's a trinket.
Yeah, leaves you with a trinket.
But it won't be a cartridge, and it probably won't be a little Switch flash card.
Right.
That you put.
But anyway, I want to stay away from rumors and kind of end it there, just because that's literally what he's always jumped back on, was these little things like that. I want to focus. I want this to be what we're left with.
Firmware still being developed, which makes your console run. We don't know if you can boot up this console yet. We haven't seen any evidence that this console is bootable at this point. Full stack development, so server communications.
We still need driver development.
We need driver development. We need communication between, according to these job listings, between the console and the controllers. There has to be communication.
Yeah.
And this is supposed to be in people's hands in a little over 3 months. That ain't going to happen. I mean, I guess if you rush to do this and then ship them by air quickly within a week to get over, to get some of them. But the cost of doing that, at least based upon the books, is massive. But you could do that. Maybe just to make that date, you make 100 of them or a few hundred. I mean, the Atari VCSs have made, I think they were probably made like, they made like 100 or 150 recently. That was the last update. But the VCS is produced. It's done. So we it's a real product.
Still a waste of money, but
yes,
it's
but
done.
But it's a real product. It might be a piece of shit product, but the Atari VCS is a real product. They are miles ahead of where the Intellivision Amico is at this point. And I don't care if you tap who came along on your project, who used to work at a prestigious company 20 years ago or 30 years ago. This is, to me, troublesome. And I hope this is focused on more and more as we go forward. Don't worry about what game you could play that looks like it's developed. Because guess what? That game could run on your Android or iPhone if it wanted to. That's not the issue. The issue is, are you going to have the console to create this artificial environment to play the mobile games? Where is that at? Like, where is that to play these games? The games being developed isn't the issue. Because those games, I guarantee you, if this console doesn't last a while, which I'll put my betting money on, we'll probably see those games end up elsewhere. It would be smart to have those games end up elsewhere.
Maybe an Intellivision pack on the Switch.
Maybe.
Like we had talked about before.
Or on my phone. Like, that would be a smart thing, unless there's an exclusivity contract that, you know, they'll have for that. But, yeah, look these up. We'll list them, unless they go away by the time we come out with the video segment. But I took screen captures just in case they change this. But, again, this is they're looking for people to basically make this system environment and console. They're basically looking for people to make the console. I mean, on a software and firmware
level. It's like they focused on these games for so long and then realized, oops, we need something to play it on.
We got the games done, which
games and controllers.
Games and controllers. We're not worried about the environment itself and how this is going to communicate with our servers and being able to function once you actually have it home and hook it up to a TV. What's going to happen? Will it be as usable as a toaster oven in order to play games, or will this actually function? So, all right, Ian. We're going to talk about the Sega Pluto prototype for sale on Heritage Auctions website. Heritage has been getting in the news lately here. And we brought up the Sega Pluto, what, like 3-4 months ago?
Mm-hmm. I don't even think it was that long ago.
It wasn't that long ago, Ian. So this is going to be auctioned off. If there's going to be a reserve, it'll be posted on July 2nd, recording before July 2nd. Right now, and this is likely the same one we talked about before. That, remember, they put it up for sale. They took it down.
Yep.
There was an interview with the person that found it in the flea market in Northern California somewhere, wherever it was. So Sega Pluto console prototype, it's currently at, with the buyer's premium, $3,000 right there. The auction ends in 9 days. So that'll be around the 10th or so of July, it looks like here. So this is interesting because it seems like Heritage Auctions is now starting to sell more and more hardware, starting to get into this. I don't know, after the Nintendo PlayStation crashed and burned as much as a 300, whatever it was, 320,000, 360 with buyer's premium was, like, I don't know if this is the right place to auction something like this.
I don't know if it's the right place to auction something like this. I don't know if it's the time to auction something like this. Whether it was Heritage or not, after the, you know, relative disappointment of the Nintendo PlayStation auction, if I had some sort of unique console or prototype, I don't know that I'd want to do anything with it. I'd want the memory of that failure to be a bit further in the past.
Well, it would show me that it's a huge danger to do this auction.
Yes.
Like, if I could have sold it for seven figures, if I saw someone else sell, this is two of a kind, not one of a kind. There's two of these that exist. This is the 02 version. There's a 01. But, something that's extremely rare prototype. If I saw something go for several hundred thousand dollars less than what the private sale would have done, why would I trust that I would get top dollar for this?
Yeah.
Especially when that auction was what? Was that 2 months ago? 2.5 months ago? That the Nintendo PlayStation?
Right. What triggers the now's my time to sell? Like, in you after looking at that?
I mean, are you getting a rusty trombone from the people at Heritage Auctions to make sure that, hey, don't worry, it'll sell, like, because they don't care. They're making their buyers and sellers premium either way. Like, there's no risk to the middlemen. I don't know why you stretch and don't think you're going to get hurt. I think it's funny to watch that. I was like, here it comes. Here's Ian getting hurt. So, okay, I'll go over the listing here. Sega Pluto-02 console prototype, Sega circa 95-96 until recently, the Sega project was completely unknown outside of the company. The world was only included when a Sega America employee leaked the details of the console to the world back in 2013. Two have been confirmed to exist. This one is Pluto-2 unit. The other is -1. This one has Sega Saturn printed on the top, and the label on the bottom of the console reads Pluto-2. The BIOS for both prototypes is a North American version, which makes sense considering Japan did not seem to take as much of an issue with the price point as North America did. There you go. So this is a Saturn that has the front loader on it. It's slightly different here, and it has the built-in internet stuff.
Yeah, it has an onboard NetLink modem.
Yeah. There you go. And it has whatever. I guess they haven't discovered what was on that hard drive yet that was in there, that little drive. They don't know what's on there.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the difference. Those are the three main things, difference here. So it's not as interesting as Nintendo PlayStation. It's still interesting, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's just not as interesting as something that never came out that was, you know, could have changed the whole video game industry. So I don't know. Again, if this was me selling it, obviously it's not. I don't know what the person's situation is. I would just get feelers for this until I got something hit what my minimum was. Because if this, say my minimum in my head is $50,000, I don't know if this is going to get something to that high. I don't know. It's hard to guess what something like this is going to end at. There's a lot less interest in a Sega Saturn prototype versus obviously Nintendo PlayStation.
Sure.
This doesn't have any sort of prestige or I guess the mythical status of Nintendo PlayStation does.
Yeah.
Especially since it's a console that already exists. It's just a modified
console. It's just an updated version of
it. It's a Robert Stack update, which that should be on my soundboard.
Update should definitely
that should be on my
there.
Soundboard.
I would actually thumbs up that one.
That one should be on there. How have I not think of that? I only have two more spaces on here. So
update definitely deserves to be there.
So this is the auction going off July 9th to 12th. In Dallas. Please don't go to Dallas. I think that they're now doing not these in person anymore because it's a hotbed now for the good old COVID here. They did a little YouTube video Heritage for this to promote this.
Oh, really?
I don't remember them doing that for Nintendo PlayStation.
Not that I'm aware of. If there was one, I didn't see it.
It's just a cheesy little promo video that shows like a still image and like background. It's and game over flashing. All right, I'm going to put that in the video. I did not see that there for sale. But there's other stuff that's being auctioned. That's where they're auctioning off stuff like the Resident Evil
chainsaw controller.
Chainsaw.
I mean, I'm unaware of that being that.
I mean, it's cool, but I don't understand why you would go to Heritage Auctions to. It's not extremely rare, right? I mean, you can find those.
Yeah,
I think people just want to. At this point, I think it could be the case of people wanting to just catch speculators with their pants down and making bad decisions like they've been making with the Atari games. By the way, I talked to our pal Albert, who runs our favorite website for Atari Age, since the other one died out there. And he's a big time Atari collector. He wasn't even aware of these insane auctions happening.
Really?
So the Atari
he had no
people,
idea.
So I wonder if the Atari people.
I like how some of the Atari people are obviously they're just like, yeah, we're Atari fans. They're not speculators. They don't keep up to date on this shit.
I just think it's funny though because people like him and Rick Weiss probably have some of these sealed laying around, some of these games, and a bunch of other people do because they've been collecting Atari for 25, 30 years.
Yeah,
they could tank these markets easily if they went and got these graded and. Hey, we'll just throw out, you know, like here, you have like your sealed, sealed, whatever, Pac-Man, which is common as dirt, the ones they literally had to put in a landfill. It's at $725 with 9 days left. You don't think there's a few hundred of those in these collectors easily laying around?
they're definitely
easily.
Is.
I might have a sealed Pac-Man. I'm not sure. I got to find where my box Atari games are. And, like, this stuff is not rare here. Yeah. A Contra's at 11 grand though, sealed Contra. Holy shit. Hey, I love Contra. Wow, 11 grand. That's more than what the Legend of Zelda's going for sealed right now.
That's insane.
11 grand for Contra. I mean, Contra is a famous game, but in the history of video games, I don't know if that warrants that price though. Compared to that's the heavy hitter right now compared to all the other NES games besides Mike Tyson's Punch Out. That's going for 12 and a half. Rev A, not even the first one. That's a mid-production right there, which maybe some of these people don't care. The first Super Mario Brothers 3, The Left Bros, is at $16,500 with 9 days left.
Jeez Louise.
So what the hell do I know? What the hell do I know? I mean, I wish I had a sealed Super Mario Brothers 3. I wish I could have foreseen all this 10 years ago when these weren't worth that much. You can get these for a few hundred dollars, a lot of these seal gifts. Sorry, Ian, your seal Lolo is only at $460 right now.
Jerks.
Right now. You should bid it up. This will be the telling one. A sealed bases loaded 3 is only at $76. Poor Ryan Sandberg. Show him respect. Hey, a Batman Return of the Joker, a very uncommon game. Oh, that's only complete in box. It's $105. They haven't really caught on to the complete in box stuff unless it's sealed yet. Another Contra sealed 7.0 is at $2,800. So in the same auction, they're only at $2,811, but there's two in the same auction. Make sure you know there's a lot more of these that exist here. So anyway, that's all. This is an aside. We'll comment on these once a month, maybe just because they're fun. And it's interesting to see what's being bid on and what's not. The complete in box stuff that was going for nothing compared to the seal stuff.
Right.
Even stuff that's hard to find. We talked about some of. I think we talked about. I think a Gunnack didn't go for even a lot sealed one. It went for less than a grand, I believe, and that's a hard to find game.
Wow, that's impressive.
I believe I can look it up, but it just shows you again how this is just a different audience versus the people that exist. But hey, if you want to get that Pluto prototype, Ian, you can get on there. Oh, the Resident Evil 4 limited controller, chainsaw controller, is only at $56 right now with 11 days left. So, and the Biohazard 4 one unreleased controller design is at $210. It's from 2004. So I don't know.
Weird.
There's an Xbox projector console. Projector console from 2000. What? I didn't know that was a thing. There's a projector in the front? Wow, that's at $230. To me, that's interesting. I didn't know that was a thing. I didn't know about that before. That's like the last thing in the auction block there. It's got a built-in projector. Okay, then. Branded by DLP Technology in the front. Okay. Must be a promo thing. There you go. All right. Well, we'll come back there. We'll see what they end up at in a couple of weeks. All right, Ian, we have a Patreon poll.
We do. Patreon.com/CU podcast.
That's not what you've been getting wrong. What have you been getting wrong?
We do the full video podcast.
That's available.
Do weekly writing.
The audio podcast is free, everyone. It's $3.99. $3.99 on podcast, Google Play Store, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Spotify.
I do a weekly writing. We also
talked about burgers last week.
I did.
Made me a little hungry.
Yeah.
I've been fasting.
What else? I do a hangout once a month, and you get to vote in a weekly poll topic.
In third place, what was your favorite thing about the start of summer, and were you a beach kid? Only 16%. It ain't going away for the whole summer. I will tell a story or two. In second place, speaking of summer and summer reading, what were your favorite books and book series growing up or recently? And in first place, Ian, this is your topic here. What is your go-to game when you need to decompress and eliminate stress? Which I know you have very little of.
Yeah, very, very little. So the genre would be first-person dungeon crawlers. And I think specifically I would say Etrian Odyssey on the 3DS is a game series.
What is it called?
Etrian, E-T-R-I-A-N, Odyssey. On the 3DS is a series that I keep going back to. There's 6 mainline entries in the series and I believe 2 spin-off entries. And it's a first-person dungeon crawler like the original Bard's Tale or Wizardry. The big thing with Etrian Odyssey is, and they made it a little bit easier as time went on to kind of meet people halfway, but you draw all your own maps in Etrian Odyssey. So the bottom chunk of your 3DS acts as virtual graph paper, and you make the maps as you go through the dungeons. I think it was like jokingly referred to as a cartography RPG when it first came out.
That's pretty
so
cool.
So you do, I mean, back if you played a Wizardry on the NES or on the PC, you had to do this. This was stuff that you had to do. You had to get the graph paper and draw the maps square by square if you had any hope of getting through the later levels without getting, you know, murdered or lost. Games, as time has progressed, a lot of these first-person dungeon crawlers have added some amount of auto-mapping, whether it, you know, fills in the spots as you walk, it fills in for you, it does the mapping for you. You know, you can find spells that will illuminate chunks of the map and things like that. So a lot of those games, you know, did work on making that mapping aspect less of an issue, but Etrian Odyssey purposely goes back to the basics. With the last one, Atrian Odyssey Nexus, you can actually turn, you know, full like wall and floor auto mapping on, so it'll, you know, make the map as you walk. You would still want to leave icons and notes on the maps and all that, and they give you a lot of ways to do that. But on top of the mapping, it's a very, very difficult game, like most classic RPGs are. Your progress is measured by, you know, hallways and rooms. You know, you're going for inches here, not miles. And it's very, even though it's very difficult, there's something about the routine of going to the dungeon, map out a new section, fight a couple battles, level up, go back to the town, you know, spend your skill points, rest at the inn, you know, buy some items, sell some stuff off for gold, and go back in and do it again. And you just get into this very pleasing lull. And there are people who play RPGs who get really into the number crunching and the statistics and stuff like that. And when I need to distract myself from something, especially that is emotionally upsetting to me, getting lost in that cycle of numbers and leveling and mapping helps take my mind off it, because there's so much other stuff at play.
So you want a game that it's so involved that you have to be constantly thinking about things in the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's involved, but it's also a very simple loop. I mean, there's a lot of steps to what you're doing, but none of it is particularly hard. And you can fall, even though I say it's a challenging game, you learn how to play it safely. So you're actually never really too terrified of dying. You're like, you get used to knowing, okay, I've got to level up. So you just grind forever. And grinding gets to the point where it becomes, it's not dangerous.
Well, RPGs to me aren't too stressful, right? Because they're like slow at your own pace.
Yeah, but yeah. The other thing is, you know, these types of RPGs are generally fairly light on story. It's what you make up. So, you know, there's really nothing to distract you from the adventuring, the mapping, the going in and getting treasure and finding stuff. And there's something appealingly simple about that to me.
And this is the one on the DS?
They've only made it on the DS so far.
They've made multiple ones, it looks like.
Yeah, right? 1 through 5. 1 through 5, Nexus, and then 2 spin-offs.
Oh, there's little story interactions with people, little cutscenes.
The 2 of the spin-offs.
There's a cat in the guy's head.
Oh, yeah, that's the shopkeeper from Nexus.
There's a big fat cat.
Yeah, there's a big fat white cat on that lady's head. The 2 spin-offs, the Etrian Odyssey Untold series, those are far more focused on story.
I'm looking at the bottom. Yeah, okay. Also, so it has a graph paper on the bottom. That's pretty cool. And you can, like, hit your stylus and put things on. That's not a bad idea.
So that has kind of been my ultimate one. I mean, I started, I got through, not to be like overly emotional, but I mean, that was the game. I think it was like the second or third one I played relentlessly when my grandmother got sick with cancer and passed away, because it was one of those few places where I could find, I could shut my brain off. Basically, I could turn everything else off and just focus on this. I started playing Nexus. I put off Nexus specifically because I knew there would be a time in my life where I needed a game like this. And I ordered Nexus about a month and a half ago, and I've been playing it when I start to get just too fucking pissed off at the world right now. It's a good time to play a game like that I can escape into.
Sure. I usually don't go back to, as an adult, I don't go back to video gaming that much when I'm stressed, because to me it doesn't soothe me. I don't know. It's just not a thing. But when I was a child, the more I think about it, I played games a lot when I was stressed, because I grew up in a household where, you know, parents were arguing every single day.
Sure.
And you always heard yelling. So you try to escape and try to like go into your little yeah. corner. And try to do that.
Your space.
Yeah, that CRT right there, that mana box, is where the NES was hooked up to, Ian.
Yep.
It was upstairs for a lot of time. It wasn't the TV for the first years of the NES. It was upstairs, and because that has an AV out, and you hit the little button to turn it to RGB, and you played it in the hot fucking... It was one of those converted upstairs that were all an attic, and they were converted.
Yeah.
You have the attic door, so like you try to keep the heat out, but it's next to impossible.
Right.
It was one of those. So I play whatever NES game I had in order to, you know, be okay. I have one specific story where Street Fighter 2 called me. This is more of a Tales from Past Neighborhood thing, where this was Jesus Christ, Street Fighter 2 came out on the Super Nintendo at 92. So 12, that is sixth grade, I believe, something like that. Sixth grade. Sixth grade, maybe seventh. So there was a performance group thing for some class. I forget what it was, but you put on a performance and you grouped up into like four or five students each. I don't even remember what my group did for whatever this project was, some performance or what have you, some project. It might have been an AV sort of thing. So there was a group of five kids, and they were most of the bullies that grouped up. You're allowed to group up. So it was Rob.
Goddamn Rob.
Joey H. I won't say your last name.
Joey H.
You little Napoleon complex little bully brat. He used to cross-check me when we were playing street hockey. Oh, you used your stick, you asshole. It was him, Mike S, and another person. They did a video, which on a camcorder was a big deal. They did a music video making fun of another student in cosplay. And the teachers didn't know at the time. It was funny. You're a kid, you're laughing. Looking back, you shouldn't have laughed at it. Making fun of a kid that they all picked on.
Right.
You know. And the kid they picked on, I don't want to say he deserved it, but he was a little dickish, but he didn't deserve how much they picked on him. They made it worse. And they did something bad to him later on that one kid got suspended for, which I regret not going after the kid that did it, but I was too weak when I was 13, 14. I didn't stick up for kids as much because I was afraid of getting attacked, but whatever. It's one of my regrets in life. But anyway, so they did a video making fun of this kid. They dressed him up. They did his little how he talked. And so people were laughing. Most of the people realized. The teachers didn't realize it. We all watched this on like the TV, like the AV. You know, they wheeled in the cart. And so I semi-yelled to someone like, I would say 20 feet away, hey, that's Thomas, they're doing him. The teachers heard that. And so the teacher's like, oh, okay. So those kids got in trouble because of that. So the kids blame me for ratting them out. I didn't know, I didn't realize what I was doing.
Right.
I was in the back of the room, there was kids, because it was like all the groups, it was all the kids grouped up from the multiple classes. And so I was going to my friend. So they wanted to beat the shit out of me. When I was like 12. These are like three or four kids. One of them I could probably take out. I can't take out four of them. Sure. So coincidentally, they were doing like I think it was supposed to be like a softball game. We rarely had things outside of school where everyone would meet up. All like, say like 30, 40 kids.
Right.
So now I realized I can't go because it's a trap. They're going to either harass me or try to beat me up. And it wouldn't be a fair fight, likely. And I wasn't at the state I was worse white were. This was before the Jeff fight. If it was after the Jeff fight, they wouldn't have messed with me. This was before. I didn't know I would be able to snap and almost kill someone. So I didn't have anything going for me then. So I backed out of it. I backed out of the softball thing. And I felt ashamed. I was obviously stressed. They were taunting me. I'll never forget this Christine, who I rode on the bus with. You try to trick me into going. Now remember, this is turning. This girl, Christine, I lived four blocks from that I was friendly with and had a semi, not really crush on, but she was cute, she was friendly. She called me up on the phone, and no girl called you up on the phone ever when you were 12 years old. Hey, Pat, why don't you come on out?
I remember. I think you've talked about this before.
You 12-year-old bitch. You're trying to do the dirty work of what to get your boyfriend bully to get me to come out to have me humiliated. I'll never forget that as long as I fucking live.
Maybe you should, though.
That was the most devious thing a girl ever did to me in grade school. And I rode on the bus with this girl every year for like 8 years. And she tried doing that. So anyway, I play Street Fighter 2. All the while I know that, you know, I was going to be looked at as a wimp for not showing up. But it was a lose-lose situation. Unless I would have snapped and beat the hell out of the kid. But, you know, they would have maybe piled on me there. But fighting games are, I would say, not that they're common to me. This is a big end around that story. But fighting games are so, to me, rhythmic and time-based. Maybe it's similar to you with the RPGs where you stop thinking when you're playing fighting games.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have time to think when you're playing a fighting game. It's just, it's all about, okay, you know when you're in a certain spot on your 2D plane, you should be doing a certain move. You should be setting up a move. You really don't think.
Yeah.
It's really not more strategy, more about it's muscle memory and timing.
It's reaction to situations.
Yeah, and that's what I'm good at with good old Ryu. Ryu kicking ass, how he always does there. But overall, I would say after childhood, I never played a game to relieve stress. It just never appealed to me to do that, and I'm not sure why. Maybe because you know, I couldn't get lost in it like I could when I was a kid. I don't know.
Sure.
I should have beat up that. I should have beat up that kid though. Back then, I should have taken the gamble, but no one had my back. I was friends with the kids that were more quiet, and you know, like it wouldn't have went well for me, unless I almost killed the kid, and then they almost would have left me alone. Looking back, maybe I should have made the gamble. Oh, Joey, I should have taken you out. I should have taken out the kids. I shouldn't have taken out Jeff. I should have taken out those kids. Would have done it. The world, man. Sorry.
Sorry.
I didn't know I could focus that thick but quick rage at that young age. Didn't know I could do that. Sorry, I'm reliving that memory now.
It's all good.
That like May whatever 92 memory or 93 whenever it happened. Memory in the spring. That was devious, Christine. That was super devious. I never will forget that, obviously. Because no one's ever tried to do that ever besides that one moment. Try to trap me. Why don't you come on out, Pat? Yeah, you don't like me that much, Christine, to call me. You don't like me that much to call me on our rotary telephone line. We still had it in 93. Pat, it's Christine. Why is Christine calling me? Oh, this is why. Okay. All right, we have a Patreon. Excuse me, we have Q&A. Q&A time. No, this is a good one.
This is
from at Seb_Rye. Seb Rye. If you could only use one system for the rest of your life, what would it be? PCs count, but you have to name a specific model or era. So my PC rule is this. It's like Price is Right's rules. You can't go over. So that means, like, yeah, I can play 1980s games on my current PC. That's not the rules. They have to be current generation PC games if you pick the PC. That's my rules for this. Like, we'll just say within a 5-year period.
That's fine. I'm not picking a PC.
Though. Okay, I was say that's fair. Right? That's fair.
That's fair.
Yeah. Otherwise, you can play 40 years of PC games.
Right. It's cheating.
Yeah.
I can easily narrow it down to two systems. It would either be Game Boy or it would be PC Engine. With PC Engine, I'm going to allow CD unit. If you collect PC Engine, that is the PC Engine.
It's technically a different platform, but I'll allow it. Okay.
Fine. Then PC Engine Duo R. That's one platform.
Okay. I'll allow it.
And Game Boy. And I would say through Game Boy Color is fair, but honestly, I could limit it to just the black and white Game Boy and not care. I could limit it to the black and white.
Well, why the PC Engine first?
Because
the shooter stuff?
Well, I mean, the reason is honestly very similar for both. They are both systems with a glut of games that I can play for short periods of time and have fun with. I can fire up a shooter and play a shooter for 45 minutes and be like, that was a worthwhile video game session. I can log my scores. I can play a platformer that takes an hour to get through. They are simple games that I can turn on to immediately kind of quell or quench the thirst to play a game. If I want to play a game, Game Boy, easy. Turn it on. Play Burger Time. Done. Turn on the PC Engine. Play Gate of Thunder. Done. It's a lot different than, I think, modern consoles, where if I feel like when I want to turn on a modern console, I feel like I'm setting aside more time, because if I'm going to go through the boot up and all that, I'm going to play a couple of things, whereas it's easy for me to scratch an itch with those two systems and let it go. For PC Engine specifically, yeah, it's all the shooters. It's all the shooters, and there's a lot of Mahjong games, so it has a high concentration of games that I actively like, and it's got some of my favorite shooters on it. Game Boy has just tons of different games, lots of pick-up-and-play stuff, and has the positive of being portable, which is great. And I do a lot of... not so much now, but... in the past, most of my video game playing was done on a portable. So it's really tough for me to pick between those two.
You got to pick one, Ian. You got to pick one.
I think I would probably...
Yeah.
I would probably pick PC Engine.
Wow. Oh!
It's hard. Because if I don't, then I have no console for the TV. I have no option for multiplayer and playing games with friends.
Yeah, get that link. You can play F1 Race or
true.
Baseball 2000.
but it's
more,
I would be giving up portable games But when I think about it, I actually have a tough time playing games on like an airplane and things like that. I usually read instead of play games.
You're thinking about the portability.
I'm thinking about all things here. And things like RPG games, which I would be missing. I mean, there's some simple RPGs on both those systems, but I have tabletop RPGs if I want like a bigger experience. So I'm not really losing that. And I've already said I can't play a lot of long games. I think PC Engine.
This says one system. I wonder if they're trying to cheat, saying, well, if I get a Game Boy Color, I can play all the Game Boy Black and White as well. To me, that's cheesy, though. That's cheating, doing that. Because then you can say, well, I can get a GBASP, and I can play three different systems on it. Yeah, that's too cheesy to me. So you got to pick one. I don't care if you pick the original clunky. Obviously, you probably want to go for a Game Boy Pocket. This is actually more portable, and it looks better than the green. Unless you're partial to the green and black versus the...
I'd just backlight and modify a DMG.
Oh, you're allowed to do all this? Okay. Okay. I thought about this long and hard because, to me, this is a different question. If it's just console, I actually have a go-to one. And it might not be the NES, believe it or not, if it was a go-to one. It's like 50-50. But being that it's everything, I am going with, we'll just say, a Pentium Windows 95 PC.
There you go.
That's what I would go with. Because when I look back, and in terms of probably the most I was ever dedicated to one gaming platform at one time, it was that. When I was like, yeah, I still had a Super Nintendo, but barely paid attention to it from like 93 to like 98, 99. It was all PC. And you know what? I'm going to even not allow myself to play Unreal. That's too late. That's like 90. That's too late. We'll say the cutoff is like 96. So it means Duke Nukem. Doom. Let's say give yourself 5 years. You go back to Wolfenstein. You get all the you get all the first run of first person shooters. You get all the X-Wing games. You get TIE Fighter. You get Dark Forces.
Nice.
You get all the LucasArts point and click games that were still very successful up until the mid 90s. You get all the Sierra stuff, the later Sierra ones. You get like the later Leader Suit Larry's. You get the later Space Quest games. I think Space Quest 4. Yeah, 4 came out early 90s, which is like my favorite one. Well, 3 kind of is, but that misses a cut. If I cut off around 90. You get Civilization 1 and 2. And 2 was one of my favorite games of all time. So you get, to me, the biggest variety. You get Wing Commander. You get Privateer 2, which I love Privateer 2. You know, you get the biggest, to me, variety of gaming types on like a Windows 95 PC. And when a lot of those first became popular, or hit their zenith, we'll just say, and the strategy games, the space shooter sims, were like huge. The first person shooters were huge. The only thing you didn't get were probably like, you know, like your action platformers. The 2D platformers were still not really a thing then. But you get everything else.
It really wasn't until like the indie era that we actually started to see like normal. There was your Keens, but those are your exceptions to the rule. The platforming did not really exist on the PC.
And you get their charming but short-lived, like you get the full motion video adventure games,
sure,
with Tia Carrera and, you know, the ones with nudity,
Phantasmagoria.
You get stuff like you, so you get like so many, and you get genres that stopped right there, like those stopped.
Yeah,
there was never like Phantasmagoria on the PS2. Like that stuff stopped. That was a moment in time, I'd say, the mid 90s PC, where you, that to me was the zenith of all these. Or at least like the golden age to me of like PC gaming. Mm. If there was a golden age of PC gaming, that was it. Those were games you can only get on the PC, by and large. Genres that peaked there, especially adventure games, peaked there in the mid-90s. By the late 90s, they were dead. That's it. And I'd be happy with that. Even if I never played a newer game ever again, I can go back and play, you know, TIE Fighter campaigns and play Civilization 2 until I was dead. You know, I could do that and be happy. I can play Doom WADs, you know, modifications. Yeah, that'd be it. And you have multiplayer. You get Warcraft 2. I played that multiplayer. Like, you have enough multiplayer to last you, even in the mid-90s. You have enough variety. You can play Civilization. CivNet of the first Civilization was multiplayer. There's enough multiplayer games. And if you want to go back to technology, the technology on a 56K modem or even 128 was enough to sustain you even before... You know, you could do most of those gaming pretty good.
Right.
The net code must have been great, because I played Duke Nukem multiplayer. I remember not too often, but I did do it. And hell, even sports games. I had NHL 95 on CD. And that was the best version of that game, because you had full season mode and you had creative player, and you didn't get those on the consoles. So even sports games, even by that point, were catching up. on the PC. And the controllers had cut up. You actually finally had the Gravis Pro Pad with like two triggers,
yes,
four face buttons, start and select. So you had the full console experience. It wasn't just, oh, you got to use a two-button Gravis gamepad or use a joystick to play a platformer. No.
No.
That was not... People said that. Said that was done by the early 90s. That was gone. Like, we had...
I can't believe substance. I beat games like Commander Keen with the fucking big Gravis joystick that has, like, two red buttons.
Oh, you had the two red button ones?
Yeah.
So you actually had two buttons.
Trigger. Yeah. Well, no, it had a top button and then two red buttons on the side.
How many functions could you have total, though? Two or three or four?
I think it was...
Probably
I know, I know in Keen I had to hit two buttons at once.
There were still two-button controllers.
Yeah, there were two-button
controllers. It wasn't until the Gravis that really... And there was a switch on the Gravis to make it four or two buttons.
Yeah.
A lot of games still didn't support it. Anyway, like my choice, Ian, Windows 95. Yeah. You still have DOS in Windows 95. You technically still have a DOS environment to play Privateer 2 before they re-released the deluxe version, which crashed more than the original DOS version. I know because I had both. You were better off playing it in DOS. And yes, you crash randomly. I get it. But, you know, you save when you get to a planet and you're fine. You know, just save often, save early.
Save early, save often.
All right. Well, I thought long and hard about that one. Thanks for your Patreon question. I was on it.
That wasn't a Patreon.
It was Q&A. Yeah, it was good old Q&A.
Q&A, Pat.
Good old Q&A. All right, that's it for this CU podcast.
It is.
This was a fun one. We got a handful of topics out of this.
About an hour and 45.
Was it an hour and 45? Well, yeah. We started early. I like this starting early, Ian.
Yeah.
Chop, chop. Get your sleep on Monday nights.
All right.
We'll do it live. F it.
My butt is tingly. It's asleep. I'm going to go get lunch.
How do we used to do 3-hour podcasts like 6 years ago?
I was very cranky afterwards.
We did 30 topics sometimes.
I know.
Well, you're also drunk for half of those as well. That's probably why. All right. Remember, I got a Cameo, too. Cameo.com/PatContry as well. And we got the SNES guidebooks. If you're still listening to the podcast, I might do a 4th of July weekend sale, like with mattresses. So if you're listening to the audio podcast, don't potentially buy it until, we'll just say, Saturday or Friday, whenever that goes up. Follow me on Twitter, and I'll put out that notes. And maybe I'll do a sale on the t-shirts as well. We'll move some of the limited ones there. All right. For Ian Ferguson, I'm Pat Contry. We will see you later.